got Richard Glover with me in the studio.
Hello,
hi, Richard.
Hello.
What have you got coming up on Drive?
To start off with, we're going to, I think everyone, maybe everyone knows the amazing story of Dr. Catherine Hamlin, who died in March this year, who set up the fistula clinic in Ethiopia from the 1950s onwards.
Yeah.
She died at the age of 92 earlier this year. And I suppose some people, it's an amazing story of a Sydneysider who changed an enormous number of lives. So, you know, some people say she may have saved something like 60,000 people from the most sort of terrible deaths. And when she died, I think some people say, well does this great campaign end there? It's been a campaign which has been much supported by Australian money, including Sydney money. She's got lots of supporters here, particularly within the Christian community. So these fears that it might come to an end, but it doesn't come to an end at all because of this amazing partnership with this young Ethiopian woman who a long time ago came in to seek help herself and then this friendship came about, which lasted all of Catherine's life. Indeed, this Ethiopian woman was sitting by her bedside at the time.
Yeah.
She's now trained up. And they say that most of the fistula doctors in the world were either trained by this woman, who was trained by Catherine, or were trained by someone who has been trained by them. So it's this amazing story of a friendship between two women who come from such different backgrounds. You know, one Frensham school, kind of quite a mansion in Ryde down to the river, Cook and Gardner and all
completely
that here in Sydney.
Life experience, yeah.
And then a woman in the mountainous areas of Ethiopia at a time when life meant the young women being sent to the river to get all the water supplies on this long trek with the water on their back. I mean, you can't imagine two different lives, and yet they joined together in this amazing way, and that's first up.
To make the difference in people's
lives.
Yeah. Who are you speaking to about it?
Sue Williams has written a new book about Manutu Agashe and the relationship with Catherine Hamlin.
That sounds incredible.
It's called Healing Lives, and she'll be here first up. Richard Glover with you on Drive. Now, Sydney has produced quite a few remarkable people over the years, people who've changed lives. Not many, though, have had the ongoing impact of Dr. Catherine Hamlin, raised in Ryde, educated at Frensham, and then trained in medicine at the University of Sydney. In the late 1950s, Catherine and her doctor husband, Reginald, went to Ethiopia and saw firsthand the horrors of obstetric fistulas, largely eradicated in the West, but still prevalent in Africa. Up to the time of her death in March this year, at the age of 96, Catherine dedicated her life to removing this scourge. It's an achievement which did not end with her death, due to an inspiring friendship with a young woman whose life Catherine had saved. The story is told by Sue Williams in a new book called Healing Lives, and Sue is in the studio. Good afternoon.
Hi, Richard.
Catherine was an amazing person, but so is the woman she taught.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to judge between them, isn't it, really? Catherine was astonishing, but they're both so different. Catherine was kind of old school, you know, grew up, as you said in your introduction, in a very kind of wealthy, privileged background in Australia. And Mamitu was a poor peasant girl, the daughter of a peasant farmer. She had nothing. She walked a long way to pick up water every day, and her life looked like it was mapped out when she was told at 13 that she was going to be engaged to be married, and she was going to be married off at 14. So it looked like her life was kind of going to be a very, very small life.
Mm.
And then suddenly, as you know, she had a terrible birth herself. She was married at 14. At 16, she got pregnant. And she was in labour for 4 days and had a terrible labour, which caused ghastly childbirth injuries. She was kind of lying on the floor in the hut, and she realised that she had to get help, because the difficulty in Ethiopia is that it's a very mountainous country. In those days, there were very few clinics and hospitals. There were no doctors. There were no midwives to help with birth. So she just had her family there. And when you have an obstructive labour, there's nothing really you can do. I mean, in the West here, we have assisted births, we have caesareans, but there you have nothing really.
Mm-hmm. And so the epidemic of fistulas is really a byproduct of the fact that there's no obstetrics in practice.
That's right. I mean, it's the fact that there are no doctors, nurses, hospitals in close proximity. And in some places in Africa where they have really difficult geology, like Ethiopia, it's very, very mountainous and there's very little infrastructure. There's very few roads. So it's actually hard to get to those clinics even when there are problems. So it's kind of a combination mm-hmm. of many things. Child marriage is obviously makes it difficult too because young girls are getting pregnant very early on as well. But basically, it's kind of a situation about resources, really.
Mm. And so we've got this girl, this poor young girl in terrible agony in the mountainous village. Meanwhile, let's because in the book you keep on bouncing between these stories. We've got Catherine. She's gone from this privileged life in Ryde and then Frensham and then, you know, the University of Sydney. She has then gone with Reginald to Africa, hasn't she?
That's right. So they arrive in Ethiopia in 1959. So Catherine's 36. Reginald is a bit older than her. And it's a very, very different world to anything they've experienced before. They go to work at a hospital, and the idea is that they're going to be set up a midwifery centre there. But very soon they discover there are all these young girls suffering from fistula who are arriving at the hospital, and their lives feel very much like they're over. They've had these terrible fistula injuries, and it's left them leaking from their bladders and from their rectum, so they're kind of constantly soiling themselves. Mm-hmm. Their husbands have left them. Often their families just can't cope because they live so far from water as well, so they can't keep themselves clean. They get infected. Sometimes the villages banish them as well.
I mean, you say in the book, it's a fate worse than death.
And
they really do regard it like that.
That's right. And I think Reginald said they were the modern-day lepers of society, really, because There seemed to be nothing that could be done for them, really. I mean, they do feel their lives are over. Some of them go off and live in caves and just hope for the kindness of family bringing them food. Some go to the city and work on the streets to try and earn some money. I mean, it's just horrendous. And these young women tend to be at the very beginning of their mm-hmm, lives. Mm-hmm. They're 16, 17, 18. You know, they're up to 25 and their lives feel like they've lost their first child and, you know, What do they do?
Catherine and Reginald set up this clinic and start to work. And into this clinic walks the woman we've left in the hut.
That's right. She decided she needed help, so she persuaded her husband and her neighbours and her friends and family to carry her down the mountainside. So they carry her on a homemade stretcher made from eucalyptus branches for 12 hours at night down the mountainside. Then they get to the nearest road and they find a bus, and then the bus takes her to Addis Ababa. And finally, she meets Catherine and Reginald at the gates of the hospital where she's carried in because she's so weak, she's almost close to death because, you know, she's been suffering for so long. And when she sees Catherine and Reginald, she actually thinks maybe they're angels because she's never seen white people before and they just look so different to anybody else. And then when they say to her, look, we'll look after you, we will cure you, you'll be fine, she really does think that they're angels too.
Mm. And that's what happens, isn't it?
That's right. They took great care of her. She was so badly injured, she had over 10 operations and they still couldn't completely cure her, but she decided she'd like to stay in the hospital because she was so grateful for the help she'd received and the great care. She started off by making beds and cleaning floors in the hospital and started doing lots of little jobs around the place. And I think Catherine and Reg were really taken aback because she was only 16. She'd had no experience of life beyond her village. And they were so amazed that this girl was so strong and courageous and so determined to help them that they completely fell in love with her. And in the end, they asked her if she'd like to be their daughter, because they had a son anyway, but they wanted to kind of adopt her. And she said, yes, I'd love you to be my second parents. And so from then on, she called them mother and father. And that was a very, very close relationship with them both.
We're talking about the story of Catherine Hamlin and Mamitu Gashay, this book, Healing Lives, written by Sue Williams. There's a moment, she's working obviously in the clinic, as you say, but she starts to do increasingly medical work, doesn't she?
That's right. She starts off assisting in the operations, just helping out when surgeons are operating. And then gradually, she's so good at it, Catherine and Reg say to her, I think it's time that you should actually start working with us on the operations yourself. So Reg puts her hands over his when he's operating, and then Catherine does the same. So Mamitu gradually learns how to operate and how to to do fistula operations. And I mean, obviously, she's been through that terrible situation herself, so she's incredibly passionate about trying to learn how to do these operations and really determined to do the best she can by these young girls who she can see, you know, she can identify them because she was in the same situation as them. And apparently she is such a good surgeon. People say when they operate with her, the way she handles tissue is just quite extraordinary. And she's got such great eyesight. She can see, you know, the little kind of veins and things and how to patch them all together. And she's just quite an extraordinary gifted surgeon.
You say in the book that in the world today, because, of course, Catherine was not training people, you know, once she got into her 80s and 90s, was not training people, that most of the doctors and surgeons today who do fistulas were trained by Manitou.
Yes, that's
or,
right.
Or someone who was in turn trained by Manitou.
That's right. Well, she turned out to be such a gifted surgeon, but also she was incredibly humble. And they found that she was really good at teaching other people, even though she couldn't really speak much English. And these doctors were from all over the world that would come to the hospital, because it was only the second hospital in the world that ever did fistula. And the first one was in New York in the 1800s, so a long, long, long time ago. So doctors would come from all over the world, from all over Africa, Asia, anywhere where there were fistula. And Mamitu would start teaching them. And they were all kind of really taken aback that a young woman who had no schooling, she'd never been to school for a single day, she can't read or write, was actually teaching all these eminent surgeons from all over the world. And everyone was really quite stunned at this. But, I mean, she was awarded. She was, in 1989, she was given medicine's highest honour, an honorary gold medal from the Royal College of Surgeons. So she was astonishing, but she was still so quiet and shy and unassuming. And she'd kind of have a joke that she'd play on some of the surgeons that she was teaching as well, because they would do an operation and then they would put some liquid in to make sure that the bladder was holding the liquid. And she'd pull out a piece of gauze that she'd stained with some blue liquid, and she'd always say, "Oh, what a shame, the operation has gone wrong." And they would be horrified, and then she would fall about laughing. And she, can you imagine? They'd probably have a heart attack almost, really. But she'd always love playing that trick. So she had a great sense of humour with it too, and everybody kind of fell in love with her.
I mean, what's extraordinary about your book, what's extraordinary about the story really, is it begins with her being brought in on this eucalyptus stretcher, and then it lasts all of Catherine's 92 years, doesn't it?
Yes.
She's there at the end.
She is. I mean, she spent all her time with Catherine. When Catherine would come back to Australia to visit her family and friends, Mamitu would come with her as well. They travelled the world together, really. So they spent a huge amount of time together. And people say, you know, they were astonishing. I mean, I've seen them together as well. And they are astonishing because they would finish each other's sentences and they would know exactly what they were both like and when they would both want to do things, and they'd have the similar sense of humour, even though they were from opposite ends of the earth and their lives were so different, and their worlds would never have collided had this, you know, this terrible fistula afflicted so many people in Ethiopia.
So you say, in just the sense that Catherine gave Mamitu life, Mamitu gave Catherine death in a way. She knew that she was ready to go.
Yes, I think so, because Catherine was extraordinary. She operated until she was 92 years old. That's the only time she gave up operating. But as she got a little bit older, Mamitu would take on more of the complex operations, and she would give Catherine little small bits of the operations to do. So Catherine still felt she was very useful. And that was a lovely thing. I mean, people who saw that would say it's great because Catherine was born to operate. So it was wonderful that she was still able to operate till very, very late in life. And then as she got older and frailer, Mamitu gave up surgery for a while and actually became her carer and would spend all her time with her. And Catherine would wander around the hospital and Mamitu would come with her carrying a chair. And every time Catherine got a little bit tired, Mamitu would put the chair down and get Catherine to sit down, and then they'd start off again. It was just a fantastic friendship. It was just a wonderful thing.
But Catherine knew she was ready to go.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Catherine was getting quite ill every winter in Ethiopia. It can get really cold in the winter there. And she kept getting flu every year. And this year, she got flu much worse than ever before. And I think everyone kind of felt that she knew it was her time to go, really. And because Mamitu was still there and Mamitu is still operating, she knew that it was okay, I think. She'd kind of been given permission to leave because she knew her work was going to carry on. And Catherine's dearest wish was always that the hospital would be run by Ethiopians for Ethiopians. And long before her death, she made sure that all the management and all the doctors and the surgeons there were from Ethiopia, so the whole place would carry on running seamlessly without her. Mm. And that's what she's managed to do.
And Catherine passes the baton to Mamito. Mamito must be in her 70s now. Has she?
Yes, that's right.
I hope she'll go on operating until she's 90 like Catherine. But is there someone else ready to be passed the baton?
Yes, they've been training lots of new doctors and surgeons up, ready to kind of take over from when Mamito gets a little bit older. Mamito's gone back to surgery now because COVID, they kind of only had a really, really short break, a couple of weeks break where they didn't hold operations, but then she went back. And, the place has just carried on moving. They've got lots of young people in the hospital now. And they're now going out, because there are fewer people with fistula, because they've also got the midwives college that Catherine finally set up after all these years. So we've got midwives going out to villages to make sure young girls, if they're having problems with their labour, they can go and help them.
In other words, the focus is now to stop fistulas happening in the first
Absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely. Yeah. But they're also going through the country on a kind of a grid pattern and trying to work out and trying to cover the whole country to find women with fistula who've been missed before. And they've had some really older women, you know, maybe 50 years old, who've had fistula all their lives. And they're finding these women, bringing them to the hospital, doing the operation, which is quite a simple operation, but then it just completely gives them their lives back.
There are so few people, so few of us have any impact, any real impact on the world at all. I mean, this is not to make light of a normal life well led. We bring up children, we stay out of prison, we pay our taxes.
Mostly.
I mean, this is sufficient, I'm sure. But it is amazing when you think of someone like Catherine Hamlin. Maybe 60,000 people owe their lives to her.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. On next Thursday, I'm talking to Quentin Bryce, the former Governor General, who is a really close friend of hers and who was completely enamoured with Catherine in the same way. We're doing a chat together on a Facebook stream interview next Thursday. And that's kind of interesting as well because she touched other people's lives in authority as well. She went on the Oprah show and she got a lot of money from Oprah Winfrey because she was always after, she wanted money to keep the hospital going so she could expand the services to help more and more women. So she was actually, you know, we kind of think of her as a really kindly, generous person, but she was also quite, you know, tough-minded because really determined to do everything she could for these young women.
Well, there's nothing like a saint with a mission.
That's right.
Get out of her way. Get out of her way. Hey, Sue, it's a very inspiring tale, this friendship which has led to such good. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Oh, it's a great pleasure, Richard. Thank you.
Sue Williams, the book is called Healing Lives, the story of Catherine Hamlin and Mamito Gashe, and has been published this week. Yeah, an inspiring tale of a baton that was very well and beautifully handed on. And I think an intriguing story of two such different women who nonetheless created such a positive bond between them, one that lasted really a lifetime. Yeah, just in terms of Catherine Hamlin, an interesting little note on the text. There's the new park being opened and built in Macquarie Park, named after Catherine Hamlin on Waterloo Road. So I didn't know that. Just more about Catherine Hamlin coming in on the text. Catherine Hamlin was a relative of mine, says one of our texters. I am named after her. So from a Catherine, I guess. And she delivered my own mother in Ethiopia. She was motivated to love the women of Ethiopia by God's love for them. So isn't that nice? They must have loved hearing how beautifully Sue spoke about both Catherine and Mamito.